to a draft plan that went before the public for some comment yesterday. So we're going to talk with Commissioners Bill Peach and Randy Johnson about kind of where things go and what is before the public and them at this point. And then a good part of the show, we're going to talk with the county auditor. Shuna Riggs is in. It's been a while since we've talked with Shuna, but boy, has she been the busiest one in the courthouse lately in her office. And I think she picked today to come in so she could avoid maybe so she could actually get out of the basement of the courthouse maybe for at least an hour. So we'll talk elections and things related as we head through the rest of the show as well. But first, to our county commissioners, Randy and Bill, good to have you here. Thanks for coming in.
Well, thank
as
you.
As always.
Always.
And I'll just start right there. Randy, I'll go to you first because you've been kind of the one that's talked about this a number of times. Yesterday, a draft proposal went up for a public hearing on a conservation futures fund, and a lot of people testified. It was a long hearing, I know, and you guys as commissioners decided to take no action on it. So let's talk about what's kind of next with that, and then we'll talk about kind of what the proposal was.
Yeah, what's next is based on the interaction with many, many people, and of course, many disparate views. I mean, I understand some people want no tax regardless, and I can understand some viewpoints, you know. And other people said, you know, it's too broad to conservation futures in particular. We like the idea of saving farmland, but, you know, I don't want to save the rocks up in the wilderness because we already have a lot of rocks and wilderness set aside anyway. And so that was a view. A couple other viewpoints that I hadn't thought of, but were kind of interesting and were appropriate. The fact that you start at 2¾ cents per thousand is, you know, about $7.680, something like that, for a $250,000 house. But I, as was pointed out by two people testifying, also by our assessor, you know, that isn't necessarily fixed. And they were saying, you know, if we step up and do this, I don't want to turn around and suddenly have it increase to the statutory maximum, which I was really not paying very much attention to. And I appreciate those comments. Mm-hmm. And I think it was Kai Alberg, of all people, as one would expect, had pointed this out, amongst other things. And so I said, oh, my goodness, that's something that we need to take a look at and fix, too, if we're going to go forward.
So specifically, language needs to be inserted.
The language needs to be inserted for that. Yeah. Needs to be inserted also specifically for what these funds can be utilized for. So, and we're having a work session this coming Monday to have different inputs. And again, Bill was on the speakerphone, so in fairness to him, he had different thoughts, of course, than maybe I had. And of course, Mark had different thoughts than I did also, and that's okay. You know, so we still have another work session to go through, and then final language if we get there, or, you know, I'm not exactly sure where we'll be. So, and by the way, I don't want to rush something that's wrong to get it through. That just is no place to go. I mean, it may be that you needed it by November, but if the language is right or we have major holes or misunderstandings of any type, I don't want to go forward. I want to get it right for all of us as we kind of mediate our position. So,
why bring it up? You know, let's kind of go back to just the thought process, and the county's not had this. Now, granted, it's one of only two counties in all of the Puget Sound region that's allowed to have these conservation future funds, and it hasn't up to this point. But why now?
Well, two things, right? Obviously, there is the historical part was there was an issue about, I think, on when someone sold their home, they were going to tax this back in 2004 or 5, mm-hmm. I think. And as I've said before, there are pictures in the front of the Seattle Times showing Nash Huber and I think Mike McAleer on opposing sides. Right. And the realtors all got upset. And as we can well imagine, as well as all kinds of verbal fisticuffs about, oh, my God, we're going to turn to California, whatever. And so it went down, I think, if I recall correctly, barely in defeat when that went forward, and nothing has happened since. Right. And of course, we never instituted conservation futures. And then, as background, I recognize this. So I reached out before we began, and Tom Sanford Land Trust went to the West End Business Association. I went to the Squim Realtors, went to the Port Angeles Realtors, went to, of course, the Builders Association, also went to PABA to try to get the input of many people. And again, I appreciate it. And we modified or at least I went forward and suggested we modify several things, such as at year 10, let's see if we're successful, no different than the Lodging Tax Advisory Committee. And if we're not successful, then, you know, that's going to be up to those commissioners at that time. And so we'll see whether or not we're accomplishing what we want. And we need to have benchmarks and some other things to find out. And so that all makes sense. I mean, the B part of it was based on the land trust, they believe in history and adjoining counties, for if we generate $250,000, we should be able to leverage that times three. So we'd generate $1 million a year to help, again, conservation futures, just as history is. What is that? It's the value of the property. If I have underlying 5-acre zones, it might be worth 12,000 acre undeveloped, but it's being farmed right now. And the value of the farmland, say $2,000, the farmer would get, you know, the delta, $10,000, but you put a conservation easement on top of that property and it can only be used for farming. It stays on the tax rolls as a farm. And as I said yesterday, if we look at Dungeness Valley Creamery, instead of having houses there, we have 60 cows. So, I mean, and again, that's the theory, as well as 12 jobs as we're going forward. So,
Bill, I'm going to get a comment or two from you, because I know that you've not necessarily been I'm not going to say overtly opposed to this thing, but you've had concerns about this, as especially as it goes to the West End. You know, frankly, we talk about farmland problems, and that's a kind of a Dungeness Valley issue. But it is countywide. But your thoughts a bit, because Bill, I know you had some concerns about it.
Yeah, I received an awful lot of communication, especially from people on a fixed income, and. Actually, tomorrow I'll have an opportunity to speak with our senator and our two representatives about an issue that will impact the West End. I'm looking at a map right now that shows the income by different parts of Clallam County. And at least in my district, you know, we've got places like Forks with an average of $37,000 a year, and just north of there, $43,000 a year. A lot of those people are very concerned about what is going to happen as DNR revenue decreases, and there will be an impact, no question. And then what we just saw in Fire District 4, it was levy lid lift, recognizing that income stream is disappearing. They've eaten their reserves. And people are concerned about, in addition, things like school levies. You know, I believe first quarter we maybe see a proposal from the Port Angeles school system. And so a lot of people would rather have the opportunity to support, you know, fundamentals like education, as opposed to very nice to have, but less essential. I think that it's a county-wide benefit. It really is. And my issue isn't whether it's a worthy project. My issue is the people that are on a fixed income, can they afford it?
Is there relief in any sense? I mean, Bill, as you've gone through the discussion on this, what do you think?
To my knowledge, if you mean relief for the property taxpayer,
right, yeah.
If you are 62 years of age or older and make less than $40,000 a year, there is already a state law dealing with a tax reduction. The problem is you've got a lot of people on Social Security, and you've got a lot of – I know a lot of people that live on $1,000 a month. They're happy. But, you know, when you have to make tough decisions on what you do with a few dollars, you get a little less happy.
All right. And Randy, I'm sure you've heard some of that as well. And I guess it's interesting because it's been kind of pitched as this is about $7 on an average home around here.
Right.
But yet, as Bill pointed out, he's hearing from people that say, well, that kind of changes my priorities of what I need to support.
Well, and I don't disagree. And as we all know, kids are just, you know, paramount of importance to me, always have been. And if you ever look at what I support, it's always with kids programs and how do we affect that. And certainly that is a dichotomy we have, and one, again, takes a look at the preponderance of all kinds of things and where do you allocate something. And I totally agree with what Bill's saying. I mean, people that are on fixed incomes, it's always an issue, number one. But number two, every year I turn around and look at it. And my whole thing, since I've lived here for 35 years, I've watched more and more. And it's not just, by the way, in Squim. Right. I know a farm that's going to come up for sale out in the Hoco you know, right. and some other places, and I just see them all disappearing. And suddenly I'm going to wake up and it's going to be Orange County or who knows where. But I mean, and you just see this continuing to happen. And it doesn't, I think the benefit of a little bit of money, mind you, $250,000 to me is a lot of money, but a money from the county being able to be leveraged by a factor of 3, or in Jefferson County, the leverage by a factor of 4, or Kitsap County by a factor of 3.5, whatever it is. But we can leverage that little bit into actually accomplishing, I think, a lot more. And again, it's also an economic issue. I still look at places, again, I keep saying Chimicum, and you look at 100 jobs that are now working in and around, all related to ag. And that wasn't there before, right. if we went back 15 years. So,
is there going to be language in this? You addressed this at the beginning. Some of the concerns people had was about the types of land. And I've heard this from people, too. They said, you know, okay, can we make it specific to farmland? It's a little bit broad right now in the sense that it could be interpreted that, as you use the rocks in the wilderness part of this as well. Is this something you plan to address and maybe even narrow the scope of this?
Yes, we can. Okay. And B, I haven't read the new draft, but certainly okay. that was where we were going, was how do we narrow it to meet the criteria that many people had. I mean, many people have come to me and said, you know, I'm basically no tax guy, but for this, it probably makes sense. But the way you've drafted it, it is broad enough to right. to buy any frog pond one happens to look at. So, okay, I understand that. Let's see if we can't narrow what we're looking at. So,
right. I guess question to both, Bill. I'll go to you first. Did you realize this would become such a it kind of got contentious a little bit in people's reaction to it, Bill?
Yeah, I think it was really healthy. You know, yeah. it did bring out a couple of things and – You know, my input with regard to the changes that we'll be discussing Monday is we focus on the farms, and we'll see where we go after we focus on farms. But a lot of the comment I heard yesterday, I didn't get to watch the body language because I was on the phone, but I sure felt the emotion, and the emotion said, gosh, you know, here's this pool of money. I'm going to go and get some. And I saw the potential for the intent to take care of farms being diluted.
All right. Same question, Randy. I mean, did you think it would get to be this? Contention is probably not the right word, but I mean, there's a lot. I'm surprised how many people showed up and how long of a hearing.
No, I wasn't. I mean, yeah, again, visiting with the realtors who were so against it before, visiting with PABA, we always yeah. have that group, and they're all very, you know, well-informed people, and they understand what you're looking at. And we, you know, I've been round and round about, okay, how about this? How about, you know, mm-hmm. what are you really thinking? And most of the time, if we can have a rational discussion, you come around, at least the majority of people I've talked to have come around to the fact, you know, this really, you know, I don't like taxes, but this one in particular seems to make a lot of sense. But, by the way, and yeah, then, right. but, boom, 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 and you go down the list. I don't want it to be applied to everything you might ever think of, and I don't want to go here, and let's put in a 10-year sunset and make sure it actually is, you know, resulting in something good. You know, prior commissioners, just real quick, and no one probably knows this, but I looked at the Lodging Tax Advisory Committee, and it had a 10-year anniversary. Are we really, you know, that's a 2% tax, you know, on all the people that stay in the bed and breakfast and everything else. And, okay, are we really getting our return from that? You know, let's measure that. Where should we be putting? What is the return for this? And, you know, the same, I would argue, absolutely needs to be part of this. So,
just in the minutiae of this, you mentioned about the concern people had about bumping this up to the full rate. Explain to us, because what you had proposed was this was going to be a you're allowed to take more than what or ask for more in this through the state legislature.
By statute, you're right. allowed to go up to 6.25%.
Exactly.
And right. I was very cognizant of what Bill said. You know, what is affordable, and one can argue there's no right. amount affordable, but what is a very reasonable amount? And since you're allowed to go to 6.25, and we're at 2.75, I want to make sure that 2.75 is where we're going to be, not at 6.25, because you don't want to turn around and have a year or 4 years from now or someone, oh, well, we'll just go to the maximum, boom. That's not my thought process at all. And I don't think that was the thought process of the other commissioners. But again, you know, we all will change it sometime, right?
Right. So. Right. Okay. So stand by. Going to be a work session item on this. We'll see where it goes from there. It's an interesting and has been a pretty healthy discussion about it as well. We're going to take a break, and we're going to shift into elections and some things also related to the auditor's office. We have got the auditor herself here. Shuna Riggs is going to be talking about things going on with elections and such when we come back.
This is the Todd Ortloff Show on News Radio KONP.
Hi, it's Michael from Cocapelli Grill, downtown Port Angeles, reminding you that our lunch menu is filled with local favorites, from halibut and chips and fish tacos to our prime New York steak sandwich and award-winning smoked salmon chowder. There's an entire menu of delicious choices, and we know you're on a tight schedule, so we'll serve it up quick. Come on in for lunch today. Cocapelli Grill on Front and Lincoln, downtown Port Angeles.
Your community-minded friends at First Federal bring you the Community Corner, highlighting good things happening right here in our area.
Hi, I'm Abby Sill, and I'm the graphic designer at First Federal. I love living here because my family is here and has been for four generations. My granddad was born where the Y is now, my mom went to Lincoln School, and I was born and raised here. I love working at First Federal because I'm given space to create, and my opinion is respected as an artist. I'm given projects that are helpful to the community, allowing me to give back to this community in my own way.
First Federal, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Join us on the radio Thursday, November 21st for the annual KONP Port Angeles Lions Radioathon to benefit the Port Angeles Food Bank. On that day, Lions members will be on the air asking for your donation of cash and non-perishable food items. This is one of the food bank's largest food and fundraisers of the year, so it's important that we all give. During the holiday season, let's remember those in our community who struggle to put food on the table. They need the assistance of the food bank. We need you. Tune in and be ready with your contribution during the annual Radioathon to benefit the Port Angeles Food Bank on Thursday, November 21st. The generosity of this community is always amazing. Thanks from the Port Angeles Lions and KONP.
Community Corner on KONP, presented by First Federal.
Mark Gustafson, funeral director for Harper Ridgeview and Squim Valley Funeral Chapels.
The very first thing and the most important thing that I discuss with the family is them and their family, to find out how they're doing and to help them through the most difficult time of their life. And I help them all the way from the time that I bring their loved one into my care, all the way to taking care of documents, funeral services, everything. And even after the fact, I'm still there to help them when they need something.
Harper Ridgeview Funeral Chapel and Squim Valley Funeral Chapel, because your loved ones deserve the best.
I'll be right back. I'm taking the dog for a walk.
Right. You're not dog walking. You're going to Fairmount Grocery again.
What?
You'll find any reason to stop at Fairmount Grocery for those deli snacks and munchies.
Here, boy, come with Daddy.
You're not walking the dog. Why don't you just admit it? You're hooked on Fairmount Grocery's deli. Besides, your act would be more believable if we had a dog.
Okay, you're right. I'm going to Fairmount Grocery for a deli snack.
I knew it!
We should get a dog.
Fairmount Grocery, west of Port Angeles on 101.
Welcome back to the program. Going to switch gears now from preserving farmlands and such and the debate about that to what has been on a lot of people's minds lately, and that's the election, which is not quite yet done in Clallam County. One last count, and then a certification still has to come. And the person in charge of all of that is Shuna Riggs, who's the auditor. And many may not know, but many probably do know, that before Shuna became the auditor, she was the election supervisor and has quite a bit of experience in running elections and such. Now she's the boss of all of it, but still, I think, has a fondness for the election process, which is a huge part of what the auditor's office does. So, first of all, good to see you again, Shuna. Glad you could break away. It's been busy, to say the least.
It has been.
And I just wanted to get your take a bit on this ballot return. Kind of a crazy return rate, if you frankly. Usually, but then Election Day comes, and you got about 11,000 ballots have come in since Election Day, and they're all valid. Yeah. It's like everybody dumped these things on. They waited till the last Tuesday, basically.
Yep, that is correct. Our returns overall was about 52%, which is about average.
Yep.
It wasn't anything out of the normal, other than Election Day was the day that everybody decided to drop their ballots off. But it was a huge ballot. That whole front side was over 15 measures from the state, and that was a lot to read through.
Yeah, and do you think that played into it? Maybe a lot of people opened those ballots earlier, and then they kind of saw what they were dealing with, and they said, oh, this is going to take me a little longer to figure out what I'm doing.
Very overwhelming, and we got many phone calls about that, too, trying to understand the advisory votes and whether the repeal means really taking it back or maintain is really meaning maintaining. As you all know, just by reading your voter pamphlet, it's a lot of difficult information to digest, and that would be my main guess on why it took so long for ballots to come back.
I cannot recall having that many advisory votes at the state level on a ballot and on one ballot. Can you?
I remember us having about 8,
maybe
at the most, and that was quite a few years ago, but not this many.
And part of that has to do with the RCWs and the way things are now, because there's a lot of things that the legislature used to just be able to do and not have to go and get an advisory vote.
Right.
That's changed. So I know that's part of it. But I think I was surprised by some of those because why am I voting on this? What is this all about?
Right.
We knew about the biggies. We knew about the affirmative action one. We knew about the $30 car tabs. Yeah. But then there was all of these others that showed up.
The advisory votes, yes. You know, the advisory votes is just that.
Right.
It is your chance to make your voice heard and tell the legislatures which laws pass that you want to either
not.
Support or not support.
Curious. I'm glad to hear you say that you think that might be it, because I'm certain a lot of people go, why in the world did it take everybody that long to vote?
Yes. I can imagine that's why it took me so long.
Right. Yeah, I know. I almost felt like, wow, I waited too long to start.
Yes.
So let's talk about, you've got two really close races right now.
Yes,
as we sit here and speak, you've got a couple that are basically two votes are separating the candidates. I don't think I recall a close race, that close of a race in a long time in Clallam County.
Not in a long time.
I mean, I know not maybe in the years you've even been doing this.
Yes, not in a long time have we been separating by two votes. The other one is separated in the Fire District 5 is separated by 3 votes.
Yeah.
It's very, very close. I'm having my hopes up that we still have 300 plus ballots that we're trying to process today. Plus we have approximately 180 cure ballots that are still out there where a signature didn't match or they forgot to sign their envelope, that those we're still going to get some of those coming back.
So you may have 400 to 500 total that could be in play.
That could be in play to widen those margins a little bit, yes.
All right, hold your thought, because I want to talk about process when we come back. I'm going to take a break. We'll chat about what it takes to get the vote counted. And I also want to talk about recounts now and what triggers them, especially in these city council fire district races when, you know, quite frankly, it only takes a few votes to swing it either way, because there's just not that many votes to count. And we'll chat with Shuna Riggs. She's the county auditor here in Clallam County. A bit more about that after this.
This is the Todd Ortloff Show on News Radio KONP.
Join in the fun at the Port Angeles Winter Ice Village and earn free skating passes. The Winter Ice Village needs volunteers from November 22nd through January 20th. Supporting this family-friendly activity is not only fun, it's rewarding. You'll earn one free skate pass with every 4-hour shift you serve. There are lots of different jobs available, from ticket sales and skate shack duties to the keeper of the cocoa. Best part? You don't have to know how to skate to do any of them. You just have to enjoy watching all the smiles and helping people have fun. Sign up through the PortAngeles.org website and look for the link to the Winter Ice Village and then the volunteer sign-up button. Job descriptions for each position are available on the sign-up page. Again, start at PortAngeles.org and click on the Winter Ice Village link. Thanks for helping us build winter fun here at home in Port Angeles.
Do you have a case of tool dysfunction? Do you suffer from the weekly outbreak of a need for a more powerful tool? Does your old power tool just not measure up? Then Hartnagels and Milwaukee Power Tool could be the pseudoscientific remedy you're looking for. They are anecdotally proven to help you enjoy your tools more. To report a case of tool dysfunction, please call the team of employee owners standing by to help at Hartnagels at 360-452-8933. Hartnagels is best enjoyed every day and can also be experienced online. Study participants report a 73% increase in power tool satisfaction.
Users of Hartnagels experience less frustration than with box stores. Side effects may include a larger power tool collection, a satisfied partner, neighbors wanting to borrow your tools, and an increase in your desire to fix everything. If you do not experience any of these symptoms, please contact Hartnagels right away.
Angeles Millwork and Lumber Company and Hartnagel Building Supply, building homes, building community.
When disaster strikes.
This is a large, violent tornado.
The intensification of this storm we have never seen before.
Debris started falling out of the sky. Pieces of shingle and wood.
Get the latest developments on the ground.
The school is completely destroyed.
Frantic rescuers race to pull children from the rubble.
Every block will be checked for any signs of life or death.
When you can't see the whole picture, let us paint it for you. This is ABC News Radio.
The first day of public impeachment hearings has ended. It was a day of testimony from Acting Ambassador Bill Taylor and Senior State Department official George Kent. Congressman Peter Welch, a Democrat, pointed out President Trump's desire to lash out at political rival Joe Biden is not in conflict with the Constitution.
If the president wants to attack Joe Biden and his son, he's free to do it, all fair and square in campaigns. He's just not free to change our foreign policy unless he gets his way to assist him in that campaign.
Republicans calling the investigation unfair and expressing frustration over one witness they won't be able to call, Ohio Representative Jim Jordan.
There is one witness that they won't bring in front of us. They won't bring in front of the American people. And that's the guy who started it all. The whistleblower.
A vote on whether to call the whistleblower was defeated. With continuing coverage, the House impeachment hearings. I'm Dave Packer, ABC News.
Here is your AccuWeather forecast. Mostly cloudy for the rest of the day and afternoon, high 51. Tonight, partly to mostly cloudy, low 40. Cloudy tomorrow with a little rain late in the afternoon, high 51. And at night, periods of rain with a low of 44. Mainly cloudy Friday with a little rain during the day, high 54. Rather cloudy through the night, low Friday night, 40. Then occasional rain and drizzle in the afternoon, Saturday, high 50. For AccuWeather, I'm Kevin Snyder.
Shuna Riggs is the auditor for Clallam County. Been very busy in her office, to say the least, especially the last minute. In fact, you had to make the rare exception of opening on a Saturday over the past weekend, partially because of all of those ballots that came in, and also with a holiday on Monday. One of the things that has changed in this county and the rules is that you have to do a daily tabulation.
Gone are the
days where you used to say, wait till Friday and we'll have another one for you.
Right.
So
I,
that I was a little of that.
This election and the outcomes of some of those races, I would have had candidates happily waiting until Friday either. So I'm glad that we're doing it every day. Our new system that we have makes that a lot easier too.
Okay, so let's talk, and I want to get into the systems too, because there's a wholesale change of things that happened through the auditor's office locally because of state changes, and I want to chat about that later. But first, let's talk about these races. What triggers a recount? What are the rules? And you know, and as I went to the break, and when you talk about a city council race where you have, you know, just a couple thousand votes really in play, you know, that it doesn't take much to change change the percentage, right?
That's correct.
So explain what you do when there's what triggers it, and then what happens in the first recount, for example.
So in order for a recount to be conducted, we have two different kinds of recounts, first of all. There's a mandatory machine recount. Mm-hmm. And for that, we have to be within 0.5% plus less than 200 difference in the votes.
Okay, regardless
of both of those.
Okay, so regardless of
I said 200, I meant 2,000.
2,000. Okay. I was going to say, wow, that could be every one of them then.
It's 2,000.
Okay. So and you got to have both of those.
Yes. And then that would trigger a machine recount. So for instance, for the city council race for Nina and Navarra, right now we are at 0.04%. So that's well in that 0.5% in the 2,000 votes. So then we put them in our manual recount, which is where we would do a hand recount on these. And for that one, you have to be within 0.25%. And that one, you do have to be within 150 votes.
So you're in the hand recount still with this one
as well,
depending on what happens in this next count that comes out, right?
That's right. Yes.
I don't know if you can crystal ball this. What does it take to get outside of that, to get that 0.25%, roughly, would it take for either of those candidates?
You know, we were just out of that, and I wish I could remember what that was on the top of my head, but I would say even 100 votes would
sway
push
it either way.
A little bit outside of that, at least outside of the manual. You know, if it's over 150 votes,
right,
then it's going to be into a machine recount. Then it still has to be under that 50.50%,
right.
In order for it to be a machine recount. Now, for that Fire District 5, Position 2, they're 3 votes apart, yet they're at 1.299%.
Because of the number of votes that are in play.
Because there's just
there,
a small amount of votes that are in play.
Exactly.
That's correct.
Boy, but, you know, here's the thing, and this is, a softball question for you. Every vote counts, right?
Absolutely.
This is a good example people should remember. Get out and vote.
And that's where that 325 we're trying to process today, the 180 or so cured ballots where you didn't sign your envelope and we've sent you a letter, your signature didn't match and you received a letter. All of those, I know a lot of people think, well, the election's over, I'm not going to bother send mine back. Well, here's 2 races right here.
Yeah, that in that batch
exactly
that's sitting there for a response from one of those letters could be the outcome.
Absolutely.
On those cure ballots, when you say, how long do you have to respond to that? Because you have to certify the election at some point, and that takes those out of play, right?
That is correct. So we'll certify on November 26th. They have until the day before. So November 25th is the deadline. So anybody that's had a ballot that's come back to us with no signature or the signature didn't match, they've received a letter from us asking them to sign the form so that we have that and can attach that to their ballot, or if it didn't match, to update their signature so that we can update their record. You know, if you registered to vote at 18 and you're now 55,
you may sign you may have a much different looking signature, right?
Yeah. So I know a lot of people will call and ask, why did I get this? My signature hasn't changed, but over the course of 40 years, your signature does change. So we just try to keep that up to date for that. And they have until November 25th to get those back. Next week, we will begin calling each and every one of those ones that
so
we have.
So even though
you've
sent them a letter, you're going to follow up with a phone call if you don't hear
from
them.
We are required by law to call 3 days before, at least 3 days before certification, even if they got a letter. It'll just be our friendly reminder. We still haven't received this back from you. You have until November 25th to mail it back or drop it off.
But boy, I mean, you could say, this is not probably going to be over till certification, right?
It sounds like it,
at least for a couple of those races.
Yeah, until certification.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's it's crazy. And but yet kind of exciting, I guess, in some ways. I mean, for you in
exciting.
Your department, it's probably like, wow, okay, we've got a little action here today.
It is. And I always explain to my staff, it's a lot like a roller coaster ride. You know, people think that it's kind of like Christmas. Your ballots show up and that's the end of it. That's the only day that we work and tabulate those. But we work really hard for a month and a half to get up to Election Day. And Election Day is when you hit the top of that roller coaster. And then you just...
And it starts going fast. Yeah.
Absolutely. And there are changes all the time. You have possible recounts. You have landslides. You have ballots coming in. It's an exciting time.
In the process of recounts, just because it looks like we may have at least one of them, might... So you do the automatic or the mandatory as to where it's at. Can a candidate call for a recount?
Yes,
what is the process in that?
Yes, they can. So they would turn in a letter letting us know that they would like to have a recount. They can request either a manual recount by hand or they can request the machine recount.
Okay.
I don't remember the cost of it, but it's something
but they have
like
to,
25
yeah, they,
cents a ballot.
They've
or
got to
like
they've
that.
Got to bear the cost on it if it's outside of the mandatory, you know, the things that the law requires then. Okay.
Yeah.
What let's talk about the process of getting all of this out. As you mentioned, the roller coaster. Your office starts working on the election weeks before we even see a ballot.
Months. Yes. Right. Yes.
So what does it take? How much staff? And maybe you can describe take me through my ballot. I mean, from the time that it gets processed and puts in the mail to the time I get it back to you.
So we begin the election almost 2 months ahead of time. So once we have all the certifications for the state measures, the county measures, the fire district measure, the candidates, they've all filed for office, we start programming and do all of our testing, make sure every single precinct has every single contest on it that it needs to have on it, multiple testings over and over. Then we have the state come in and they do a logic and accuracy test on our system. That logic and accuracy test, we create a matrix that says this is what the outcome results are going to be based on a matrix that's in law. And then we process all those ballots, mark them all up, and run them through our system. And then we match both of those to make sure that the system is actually producing the results that we should have. And somebody from the Secretary of State is usually here to certify that testing with us.
Okay.
Once that testing is done, then we know everything's running very well. The ballots have been mailed usually right around that time. Usually afterwards, I would hope, in case you ever have any kind of error. But usually by then we have so much testing internally that we're good to go when the state comes. So ballots are mailed out 20 days ahead of time. So the voters have those 20 days. If it's a general election, you'll also get your voter pamphlet in about that same week. And then on our side, we are inputting registrations, address changes, snowbird addresses, college addresses, trying to keep all of those things up to date. And if the ballots have already been mailed out, then we're sending out second ballots to those people so that they can catch up with the voter wherever they moved. And they've got a ballot that actually has the current districts of candidates that they're voting for.
Right.
So if you've moved from Sequim to Port Angeles, you may have gotten your Sequim ballot, but if you call us up and let us know that your address has changed, we'll resend a new ballot to you for the Port Angeles address.
Now, that said, how do you flag it so that that doesn't get voted twice?
It automatically cancels all of that in the system.
Okay. Yep. So when I send my ballot in, it's not, I'm just thinking of, ways that somebody could fraudulently vote.
Yep. Those ballots come back. So if you sent in your first ballot that was from your old address, we put that on a hold because our system, once we get it in and we try to barcode it, it's going to tell us this isn't the last ballot that you issued. So we put that on hold and it just sits there until at least 7 days after the election to see if you send in your current ballots. If you have not sent in that current ballot, then we will process that first ballot that comes in.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. So, so there's a queue, it's automatically in there. And obviously.
Yeah.
The prep work that goes into it is really what assures a lot of the accuracy and things later on.
Yes.
It's not so much, I think we get enamored with the actual count. That's only a small part of it, right?
Yes. The prep work is most of the work.
Checking signatures, that is a by hand process.
Yes,
pretty much still, right?
Yep.
So you have
all
folks that they spend their whole time as these ballots come back in.
They're checking signatures. So the barcode that's on the outside of your envelope, we scan that in. It pulls up your record. It pulls up all the signatures that you may have on file. If you've moved four times, you'll have four signatures up there. And it matches that to your envelope. And we manually look at those two and put them together and see if it matches. If it matches, you're good to go. And you move on to the boards that open those ballots and separate them from the envelopes so that we can tabulate them for election night.
It's a very interesting process. And actually, if anybody gets a chance to go see it when it happens, it is.
And we
different.
Do invite people that have questions.
Right?
About
it's an open thing. You can come take a look and you
Absolutely.
Can watch when it happens. I still long for the days of the old punch cards and all of that, because that was just cool sounding. Now it's like a photocopier. It's not a that old thing in those days.
Yeah.
But you don't get hanging chads now, so
no,
that's
you
a good
do not.
Thing, right?
Yeah. No, you do not. You don't get to see those chads flying in the air.
Yeah, which was there used to be like a snowstorm sometimes. It felt like. Okay, we're gonna take a break. We'll have one more segment. When we come back, I want to talk about big changes though that happened statewide and how that affected getting the elections together. And there are some registration rules changed now and some other things with Shuna Riggs, who's the auditor for Clallam County. Back with more with her after this.
This is the Todd Ortloff Show on News Radio KONP.
Every day, 911 operators take hundreds of calls. Most are true emergencies like choking victims, cardiac arrests, fires, and motor vehicle collisions. Do you have a desire to serve your community? Then you should consider becoming a paid on-call firefighter EMT with Clallam 2 Fire Rescue. Call us today at 457-2550. Apply online at www.clallamfire2.org or stop by our offices at 1212 East 1st Street in Port Angeles to learn more about this exciting opportunity that can change your life.
Fall is really here, and we are gearing up for the holidays at Parkview Villas. This is Beth, and I invite you to come and see us. Have you ever wondered about what we have to offer? Come on by. Take a tour and enjoy a meal in the dining room, or stay for a performance by a local musician. I would love to have you as our guest. In this season of gratitude, on behalf of the Parkview Villas family, I wish you a happy Thanksgiving and hope this month begins a wonderful holiday season for you. Give me a call at 360-452-7222 to schedule your visit. It. You'll be glad you did.
All right, last segment here as we talk with Shuna Riggs, the county auditor for Clallam County. I want to talk about changes that happened this year, especially with just elections in general. People who've often followed even the results on the Clallam County webpage may have noticed that that has changed. The reporting, everything has become, I guess I would call it more centralized. Maybe talk a little bit about what that is all about. And then also let's talk about registration, because this was the first election I could come in to your office a minute before 8 o'clock and register to vote and still vote, which is kind of an unheard of thing. But here we go.
Yeah. So we did have new legislation that passed this year. As you just mentioned, we have same-day registration. Mm-hmm. So we did have voters that were coming in
and
on
people
election
did do
day.
This. Okay.
Yes, they did. Yes. They came in on election day, registered to vote, and we process everything. We have to get them into the system and precinct them. Get them all ready to go, get a ballot for them, and send them out to the voting booth so that they could vote before 8 o'clock. The other thing that has changed is we no longer have the 28-day online voter registration cutoff. That has moved to 8 days. So they can still go online, change their voter registration through VoteWa.com, or they can, or VoteWa.gov, sorry, or they can do it through the mail. But that has changed from 28 days on up to 8 days now. And then from 8 days on to election day, you have to actually come
person.
Into the office
right.
and be in person.
How have those two changes affected your office, you know, at the local level? Is it? I would think that kind of puts a little more pressure on the auditor's office.
Yes, it does. The online registration has always been there for the last quite a few years, but changing it from 28 days where we were kind of done, you put a close on your voter registration books, that is now open constantly. So you're having to update that every day. We used to have a month there where we didn't do any changes
right.
whatsoever. So our voter registrar definitely felt the pressure of that. We had an extra help person in this election that was helping process those. Because each one of those people that do that online now need to have a ballot mailed
out. That's
right.
Yeah. I mean, even though this thing kind of technically goes through Olympia, more or less, it's still going to come out of your office where the ballot
comes.
Comes
out through us, yes.
Right. Yeah. Were there a lot of people that took the late registration and did this or not? I mean, just
your feel.
I would
say on election day, we probably had about 40 people that came in, which is pretty big for us, not a presidential election to come in just that day. And on top of that, you have all of the other voters who haven't changed, but they misplaced their ballot. They never got a ballot.
Yep.
Those people are still coming in on the election day just asking for a replacement. So the 40 were the people that were actually registering and getting a ballot for the first time.
I know that in general there's been a lot of effort on voter security and some changes, and I know it affected your office. I think we chatted with you, and you were a little stressed out earlier this summer about getting these kind of mandated changes in place that every county actually had to do.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about what had to happen even well before the primary got here this year, in fact.
So we had a new voter registration system that was implemented in April. It was a little bit nerve-wracking, to say the least, as is with any new system.
Because it was a rebuild. I mean, it was a total overhaul, wasn't it?
It was a total overhaul. So prior to VoteWa, we had a local system called Votec here in the county. Each of the counties had their own local system. And then we all spoke to the state and their system, but they were separate systems. Now, VoteWa is one statewide system. So I'm connected to Okanagan County, I'm connected to Chelan County, I'm connected to the Secretary of State's office, and we're all talking live. So that's a lot to get used to. But at the same time, I can see any voter anywhere, which is great, because I can see if they're over in Chelan County and move them over here to our county. It's a lot quicker.
Right.
Because everybody's talking to each other. I don't have to call over there and say, have they returned a ballot yet? So overall, I think it's going to be a great system once we really get it down pat. It's just still learning the system and getting used to all the new.
And anybody that followed the news back in April, you weren't the only county that was having hiccups and troubles with it. It was happening in a lot of places. Because it was brand new and a new centralizing. Did it change anything in reporting the results, this system, or not? Or is it strictly on the registration side of things?
Reporting the results, not too much. We still upload to the state this election. On election night, the state was having an issue with getting everybody's results up and posted.
Right.
I apologize on my part. I should have put our PDF up there right away when I realized that the state was not getting everything.
Because Clallam was like, Where is it? And it was because you'd already reported it.
I did.
Right.
I did. And we were actually here until a little bit after 11 o'clock waiting for the state to release us. And we were one of the last four counties that were released. I think if I would have had that PDF up there, that would have helped a lot.
At least people could have seen what you had scanned out of your system.
Yes, that'll be the first thing that gets posted up there. So even if there is an issue with the state being able to publish anything, everybody can still see our results.
One of the interesting things, though, and this was a good example because you had like some Squim School District thing. You've got a few races that are across county lines, and I think that makes for interesting stuff in Clallam County when we have 24th district stuff and things like that. I mean, we kind of rely on that state reporting because they can give you an aggregate of the three or two or whatever counties are reporting.
And this, once they're up on the state level, then you can break that down and see what the precincts are reporting for each one of those. You can see what the counties themselves are reporting. It's a good thing.
And I guess to bring that full circle, when you look at things like the Port Angeles City Council race, a lot of people are wondering, how many of those votes are from the city of Port Angeles, right?
Yes.
How many are left that we, what's turnout like in those precincts?
Right, and that 325 that we have, before we do the signature checking and actually get them into the system, it's really hard to say.
Yeah, you don't know. You don't know where that, they could be from the West End, they could be from Squim, they could be anywhere. Right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, good work as always. I know it's trying times, and this was an off-year election. Presidential election is coming next year, and that's always interesting because you're going to have all of those state races and the presidential stuff, and
that's going to kick off in March because we've moved
because the primary now is early, which I think in some ways people are going to like because it'll matter. The state of Washington's always had a primary that didn't really count.
And we hear that feedback a lot. Why are you sending these ballots out? Everything's over. I think with us having it in March, we're going to be right there when everybody else is doing their elections. It's going to be wonderful.
All right. With postage paid, have you noticed, is it more people mailing or not, or using the drop boxes or not?
You know,
I'm just curious with a couple of cycles now.
That's a great question. In our county, we're not seeing a whole lot changing. There are some counties that percentage has totally flipped. They went to using the mail instead of the drop boxes. I was just reviewing this morning. Our drop boxes, we use those about 67.6% compared to 32.3% by the mail. And last year, we dropped down to about 61% the first time that postage was paid. Prior to that, it was 67%.
Interesting.
So
people
still
have this thing about
voters
dropping it off, I think.
Well, they go to the drop box, and that drop box is picked up and brought directly back to our office. Yeah. It is not held up in the mail for a couple of days. It's not going through the mail service. It's just coming straight back to us.
Yeah, I get it.
I think voters appreciate
it. I think people
are
like, I feel like it's secure, and it's going to get there.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we had, between the Squim and the Port Angeles drop box, we had 16. 16,000 ballots dropped in those two boxes.
That's incredible. And this, again, is not a presidential year. That's was pretty crazy. So, all right. Shuna, good work. Thanks for coming in. Good to talk to you again.
Thank you.
And
for
maybe
me.
You actually get a little breaks here soon. I guess you got to get through Thanksgiving and stuff, and then you do. Right?
After Thanksgiving. Yeah.
All right. Before we wrap up, Randy, you guys actually have a big meeting tomorrow. Normally, if you tune in, I have the commissioners come in on a Thursday, but they're here on a Wednesday because tomorrow, actually, you're meeting with the state legislative delegation.
Well, it's always hard to get the entire delegation of Steve Theringer, Mike Chapman, and Kevin Vandeweghe together, but to impress upon them what some of the priorities are for the county. And just very quickly, one of them is funding for mental health and the whole healthcare thing. When you listen to Peninsula Behavioral Health talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars that won't be flowing into them, and it's not like we already don't have mental health issues. That was one item. The whole issue of housing and affordability, and we have a couple issues there. We've already talked about CASA program before because we were so successful they quit funding us. So that's a discussion. Transportation, how can we be more efficient? And then Marble, Maryland, and funding from that. So again, everyone's welcome. It's in the courthouse at 1:30 to 3 o'clock. So.
All right. And it's a Board of Health meeting as well, if I understand.
Yes, correct.
So there's going to be a lot covered in that. So, all right. Randy Johnson, to see you again. Thanks for coming in. Bill Peach, Commissioner as well, thanks for coming in. And Shuna Riggs, and that'll do it for our program. We'll check in with news coming up next.
Giving you the edge on healthy living, here's Mayo Clinic's Medical Edge.
Medical Edge, presented by Olympic Medical Center.
At Olympic Medical Physicians, accessing your secure electronic health record is easy, whether you're at home, at work, or on the go. With MyChart, you can communicate with your doctor, request prescription refills, manage your appointments, explore health education topics, and review your medical history, including test results, medications, allergies, and immunizations. To sign up for MyChart or to learn more, visit olympicmedical.org.
A recent study found that the number of kids being diagnosed with ADHD in the United States has jumped significantly. There are certain risk factors that put children at higher risk for developing ADHD.
Poor prenatal care, high family stress, and there's also a genetic link. So if you have a first-degree relative, a parent that has been diagnosed with this disorder, it puts you at higher risk for also being diagnosed with ADHD.
When it comes to dietary risk factors, psychologist Dr. Michael Zaccarello is unconvinced.
I've heard the sugar. I've heard about red dyes. I've heard about carbohydrates. Taken as a whole, the literature does not suggest that diet leads to ADHD. Sleep, on the other hand, is a whole different ball of wax.
He says there is very compelling evidence that adequate sleep heightens or strengthens cognitive skills. And if you have poor sleep, that can lead to issues down the road. For more information, talk with your healthcare provider or visit mayoclinic.org.
When you're entertaining out-of-town visitors to the North Olympic Peninsula, wouldn't you love to show them something they'll never forget? Wright Brothers Aviation can make that happen with scenic tours of the majestic Olympic Mountains. Wright Brothers can show you breathtaking beauty that neither you nor your guests will ever forget. Make a memory that will make your spirit soar. A scenic ride from Wright Brothers Aviation, Fairchild Airport, Port Angeles.
Call 452-6226 or click WrightBrothers.com.
News on air and online at MyClallamCounty.com. News Radio KONP, Port Angeles, Squim, FM.